This is episode 74 of the Angry Tech News Podcast for Tuesday, August 29th, 2023.
This is the Angry Tech News Podcast at angrytechnews.com. Now your host, the Angry Programmer with a mic, Ryan Benrose.
I have to start out by basking just a little bit. NPR this last week had a very interesting story about a San Francisco underground movement who have started to thwart the Cruise and Waymo driverless cars that have been seen throughout their city by placing traffic cones on the hood of the car. Normally, I couldn't care less what NPR is reporting. It is not, in my experience, a reliable source of unbiased information, and I don't pay any attention to it most of the time. However, NPR does audio, and one of their clips made it onto this last Sunday's No Agenda show. The guys, John and Adam, had a really good laugh at how easy it is to disable one of these cruise cars with just a road cone. And here's where I preen just a bit. See, listeners to this show know about this civil disobedience, knew about it more than a month ago. Because after all, I covered this story on Angry Tech News number 69 back on July 20th. Also, just a side note, Cruise, yeah, there was another big story. I'm not going to get into it, but Cruise had another big story where they got into a wreck where a cruise car detected that all traffic through an intersection was stopped, but the car had a green light. Why? Because there was a fire truck coming through. So what does the car do? It tried to calculate the trajectory of the fire truck and say, oh, we're probably not going to hit this, and then continued through the intersection anyway, at which point the fire truck promptly hit the car, got into a big wreck. So as of this moment, the neighborhood society hating on Cruise cars, they've got half of their goal because Cruise is down to 50% fleet while they work out just why this thing decided that it was going to try to outsmart a fire truck. But, you know, I'm not going to talk about that. I'm not even talking about cars today. You might be happy, but I've got other things I can angry about. I'm going to go ahead and start with a couple of lawsuits. The first one involves Western Digital SanDisk portable SSDs who had a batch of defective drives. This was a totally big story that I actually didn't cover. I didn't think it was that important back in the day, but it has continued growing. We started getting reports back in late May of a batch of defective drives. The reports came in on the SanDisk forums and on Reddit. Western Digital responded to these reports the usual way that big corporations do, by first ignoring and then downplaying the issue and then support customers who called in saying, hey, my drive is crapping out. They gave them the runaround, told them it wasn't an issue, said, hey, call back, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the usual tactics. Then Western Digital eventually tried to issue a software patch that didn't work, and the whole thing blew up in their faces. As of today, as of this morning, when I checked again, there are now three lawsuits and counting for breach of contract, false advertising, and, quote, insufficient action when Western Digital received the reports of failing drives. The plaintiff in the first one that I actually wrote up was a man who ordered a $180 drive who says that the advertising and reviews claimed that nothing was amiss, and I guess he didn't check the forums, which actually I gotta admit most people wouldn't. He claims that Western Digital was in fact aware of the defects at the time but did not issue any warnings or recalls. The plaintiff then, of course, lost all of his data, asked Western Digital for a refund, and was instead offered the only thing they could possibly give them was a replacement from the same batch of drives. At which point, this being America, he filed a class action lawsuit. Since then, two more lawsuits have been filed. Details of the actual issue, I have to get this from the forums. I tried getting it from Reddit, but that place is frightening. Western Digital, of course, has always been silent on the issue and probably won't start talking now that they're being sued. But according to the SanDisk forums, this affects 2 terabyte and 4 terabyte SanDisk Extreme portable drives and Western Digital My Passport drives, any of which were manufactured since November of 2022, were in a bad batch. It's not clear when the batch gets good again. Maybe we'll find out. But again, you know, if a large company is being sued, they shut the hell up, so we might not get anything. But users report that the devices mysteriously disconnected from their PC, which is, by the way, the one problem that the software patch tried to solve and failed. That the files on the device become unretrievable. It just throws mysterious errors. That the devices occasionally will self-wipe without warning, erasing the file system and needing to be reformatted. So if you feel like getting a portable drive, maybe skip out on the SanDisk Western Digital ones for now. Maybe Western Digital will suddenly turn around and become good again. I vaguely remember that that was absolutely top of the line back in the 90s. But I haven't heard that much good since, and I'm sure there are a lot of dudes named Ben who purchase a lot more drives than I do who are going to be able to tell me a lot more about the quality. I'm just saying, this company, they stepped in it. Let's see, the other lawsuit is a lot less corporate screw-up and more corporate screw-you. Hewlett-Packard is well known for doing questionable things with their printers in order to lock in its users. The model of selling a printer cheap and then upcharging printer ink like it's made of liquid diamonds is pretty well documented at this point. Now they've found another way to force people to buy their overpriced ink. It is well known that modern multifunction all-in-one printers can do things that aren't printing, for example, scanning documents or sending faxes. According to a complaint filed in a San Francisco district court, when an HP printer is out of printer ink, those other non-printer functions also shut down, and the printer goes into a non-functional bricked mode until you give in to its demands to mortgage your house to pay for yet another vial of HP's liquid profit. It's pretty well understood that inkjet printer ink dries up after a while, whether you use it or not, which is a massive waste of people who print infrequently, because you essentially have to buy a new ink cartridge every couple months, which if you only print every couple months is every print job. In the worst case, what you get is one page out of a $50 ink cartridge. And by the way, if this is you, you really need to consider a prepaid Kinko's card. They're cheaper. But according to this complaint, it's worse than that. You might get zero pages from a $50 cartridge because the printer forces you to open a brand new cartridge and install it in order to scan a document. You never print anything and then it dries up. And the district court judge agreed, this does seem to be a valid complaint because she's letting the class action go forward, rejecting a motion to dismiss by Hewlett-Packard. Maybe, this time Hewlett-Packard will finally get the clue to stop gouging their customers. Who am I kidding? A multi-million dollar judgment is just the cost of doing business for somebody who makes as much money as they do. By the way, the Register, where I got this article, did say that they reached out to HP for comment, but got no response. Me, personally, I'm sure that they wrote one, but they just couldn't print it out because their printer was out of cyan. From the Serpent Oil Department, in a merging of technologies sure to titillate office workers everywhere, or at least the programming type, Microsoft has announced that the popular Python programming language will be coming to Excel. According to the Microsoft 365 blog post announcing the feature, quote, you can manipulate and explore data in Excel using Python plots and libraries, and then use Excel formulas, charts, and pivot tables to further refine your insights. You can do advanced data analysis in the familiar Excel environment by accessing Python directly from the Excel ribbon. Now, when I hear the phrase Python in Excel, my first thought is I can write and attach a Python script to my Excel workbook that operates on my Excel data, much like VBA does, and then returns the results in a form usable from Excel. That's kind of cool. But before you get too excited, they did not do this totally expected thing. They didn't integrate a standalone Python interpreter. They didn't integrate any Python interpreter, allowing users to write Python scripts directly into Excel sheets. No, that's not what they did. You know, they didn't want to give you something that would open up new untold calculation and productivity options directly from your computer. It would also open up exciting new vectors for office-based malware, but let's just say they don't need any more of those. They got plenty as Excel moves closer and closer to becoming its own general-purpose operating system. But no, Microsoft has integrated the feature Python with the cloud. By leveraging the power of Microsoft's online subscription services, you can send all of your proprietary data to Microsoft services, where they will run Python on your behalf using one of their pre-written Python scripts and then return you an Excel worksheet with the results. The Post also announced a partnership with the Anaconda repository, who now hosts the full list of Python libraries that you are allowed to use with this feature. I went through the Microsoft announcement twice, just in case I missed it. I even watched their banal product demo video, cringing as I wasted my precious research time, watching an MP4 of a mouse cursor click on various UI elements in real time, waiting for the big reveal where they showed some powerful and useful scripting capability. But as far as I can tell, what Microsoft has implemented is a powerful and extensive new set of Excel macros, which run in the cloud based on the code in the Anaconda repository. You can't write Python code in your spreadsheet. They're not enabling any Python code to run locally. In fact, they appear to have fully insulated the Excel user from ever seeing or interacting with any Python code at all. From the user-facing perspective, it's all neatly wrapped up in the Excel UI and drop-down menus where you choose which pre-approved algorithm to run. It may as well be written in C++ or Ruby or Perl or PowerShell. Now that would be something. But they sure are taking that Python angle heavily in their marketing. I mean, blog announcement. The word Python appears 39 times in the four-page post, and I didn't even count how many times in the screen cap demo video they said Python. But of course, there's that other niggling little bit. The fact that it all runs in Microsoft's cloud and not on your local machine. Excel now has an easy one-click method to upload your corporate proprietary data to Microsoft servers, have them run some CPU across it, and then send back your data that you're expected to trust. You are sending your data across the internet to an outside actor. You're taking that data at rest on a local machine and turning it into data in motion across the internet. The Post says the data is encrypted in transit, so there's that, but it's obviously decrypted on Microsoft's end because you don't run calculations on encrypted gobbledygook. Okay, I'm probably tilting at windmills on this point. The ship on cloud computing has already sailed in most enterprises, but I just gotta say, for safety, any corporate dude named Ben who does security threat modeling had damn well better have Microsoft listed as one of the threats to be mitigated, even if the mitigation is, if they screw us, we'll just throw lawyers at them. Also in blog post, Guido Van Rossum, the inventor of the Python language, had this to say. I'm excited that this excellent tight integration of Python and Excel is now seeing the light of day. I expect that both communities will find interesting new uses in this collaboration, amplifying each partner's abilities. Of course, Van Rossum joined Microsoft in 2020, so for what it's worth, he is in fact paid to be excited by this announcement. The feature is now available in a beta channel public preview, only on Windows and only for Microsoft 365 insiders. They say that it will come to other platforms at, quote, a later date, although some functionality will be restricted without a paid license. Alternatively, you could download a free Python interpreter and have the ability to write your own scripts to do your own data crunching on your own computer inside your corporate firewall securely and for free, and then import that data into an Excel spreadsheet. However, if you did that, you wouldn't have a flashy UI button in Excel, which hardly seems worth it. From the Why We Can't Have Nice Things department, Dropbox is officially continuing their unlimited storage option in Dropbox Advanced. Dropbox Advanced is the company's paid business plan, which has unlimited as much as you need storage, along with some management security and integration functionality attached to the account. But really, when you buy that, you buy it for the unlimited storage, probably. As with all services that market unlimited, what they really mean is, hey, we're cool if you need to store a lot of data, but don't completely break our data centers, bro. But of course, as these things go, a few people have ruined it for everyone. So there is, I learned today, a cryptocurrency out there called Chia that was founded on the idea of being green. See, the big problem with proof-of-work crypto like Bitcoin is it takes a lot of energy to mine. All that energy being turned into waste heat by mining rigs is clearly destroying the environment, changing the climate, yada, yada, yada. The incentives are totally on whomever uses the most power, has the most GPUs. The person who has the most GPUs and the fattest grid connection wins in a proof-of-work system. The way chia mining works, which, by the way, they don't call it mining, they call it farming, is that their app, yes, it's always an app, you always have to download an app, generates lightweight hashes, which are stored on the hard drive alongside a cryptographic timestamp. Then, at some point later, those hashes are scanned for valid proofs, which are then used to generate new blocks on the chain. The idea is to reduce overall network power usage by shifting the resource burden from whomever has the most computing power to whomever has the most storage space to store as many possible hashes for later scanning as possible. And this is where Dropbox comes in. Not satisfied with simply buying dozens of multi-terabyte drives to feed their mining habit, some inventive chia miners have taken to subscribing to Dropbox Advanced and truly testing out what they mean when they say unlimited. And it's destroying Dropbox. According to Dropbox, there are a few miners that are using hundreds of petabytes for the chia mining service, bringing down the entire Dropbox service in the process. And so, the days of unlimited Dropbox are coming to an end. Going forward, a Dropbox Advanced subscription will come with 15 terabytes of shared storage plus 5 terabytes for each additional active license. Dropbox has committed to contacting the small minority of users who are currently using more than that to work out a plan that fits their needs. As regards the people mining chia using Dropbox services, for Dropbox's sake, I hope that plan includes a significant cut of the profits. From the bad mood lighting department, some researchers at Università di Catania, it's Italian, in Italy, an Italian word who I'm a stupid American and can't pronounce, and the University of London in the UK, have discovered 4 new IoT vulnerabilities in a popular model of smart bulb. The researchers' original goal was to demonstrate how insecure Wi-Fi connected Internet of Things devices are. So to that end, they chose one of the most popular smart bulbs available today, in this case, the TP-Link Tapo L530e, and started digging for vulnerabilities. And boy, did they find some. As a result of the research, they published 4 particularly bad vulnerabilities. First, improper authentication vulnerability, which allows attackers to impersonate the device during session key exchange, letting them retrieve Tapo user passwords and manipulate the devices. Manipulate in this case, meaning they can turn your lights on and off or change the color, alternatively turning your home into a haunted house or a disco. Second, vulnerability, hard-coded checksum in the app used for decryption. Attackers can get the checksum that is hard-coded in the app. There's a great XKCD comic out there that says function get random number, and then in the function it says return 4, and then the comment on the function says, trust me, this is random, I got it from a fair dice roll. And that is a class of vulnerability where you can come up with something completely random, and then you just hard-code it in the source code of your app. And they did this here with this particular light bulb. The problem with that is that an attacker who can get this checksum by brute force or by decompiling the app, because the app, Android at least, they're Java apps. They don't turn into assembly code. They turn into Java bytecode, which you can get right back into source code with a really cool utility called Jeb. Once you get this checksum, it allows access to the session keys for all Tapo devices. Third vulnerability, lack of randomness flaw during encryption, which makes devices vulnerable to replay attacks and cryptanalysis. Fourth major flaw, session keys and messages do not expire quickly. They are not checked for freshness, and therefore that makes the entire system vulnerable to replay attacks. So what does all this mean? Well, using a combination of these, researchers demonstrated how, by impersonating a bulb and retrieving the app user ID and credentials, they could then extract the user's Wi-Fi, SSID, and password from the TP-Link app, thus allowing them to gain access to all devices connected to the user's internal Wi-Fi network. They do point out that the device needs to be in setup mode for this attack to work, but that the workaround for that is the attacker can simply deauthenticate the bulb, forcing somebody in the household, wondering why it's dark, to push the reset button on the bulb, get it working again, put the device into setup mode, and enable the attacker to own all of your Internet of Things appliances. At which point, all your Wi-Fi belongs to us. The researchers point out, again, that this type of problem is not limited to the TP-Link Tapo devices and is, in fact, endemic to the entire class of IoT smart devices. They just chose to analyze this one because it's currently one of the most popular on Amazon. So if you don't want your entire home network to get owned as a result of having one of these devices, well, the absolute best way to protect your network is to not bother with things like smart light bulbs. Learn to walk across the room and use that small plastic lever mounted on the wall about chest height when you want to turn the lights on or off. You do not need an app for this. Okay, probably just don't get the appeal. I'm fine, I'm old, whatever. I never quite understood the critical use case that justifies opening up your whole home to the impressive varieties of exploits in these things just so that you can turn the lights on in a room that you're not in. But maybe I'm just not well equipped enough to understand why we need an app for everything. After all, I'm personally so old-fashioned that I still look up from my phone once in a while. Angry thanks go out to Brian Janak, Gummy Nerds, Sir Sean of the Allegheny Valley, Rachel Zimmerman, Fantasy Weddings LLC, which I'm guessing is somebody using their PayPal account and got that thing attached to it. Let me know, ping me if you want your real name called out, and Christopher Reamer for their PayPal support of Angry Tech News. Also, angry thanks to Joel W., Memes1337, and Mr. Mister for boosting the last episode using a modern podcast app at podcastapps.com. Message from Memes says, Leet boost to support the anger in the machine. I got you there, bro. And Mr. Mister, who was the most succinct, saying, ... Angry Tech News is produced on the value-for-value model. We don't take sponsors, we don't play ads, and we don't charge you to listen. But we are funded by your donations. If you received some value from listening to this show, please send some value back. Go to angrytechnews.com and click on the donate button. Send whatever you think this episode was worth to you, whether it's, you know, the cost of a 365 subscription or maybe some IoT devices, although don't expect me to plug them in. That's it for now. I'm Ryan Bemrose, the Angry Programmer with a mic. I'll be back next week with more Angry Tech News.
This has been Angry Tech News with the Angry Programmer, Ryan Bemrose, at angrytechnews.com. Stay angry. Stay angry. Stay angry.